All right.
So let's go. So I already told you that I wanted to talk about shape changes and inspired by passive motions in plant systems. I'll talk quickly, briefly about some typical architecture that can trigger those kinds of movements. And my talk will be mainly on a collaboration I'm doing with chemists, where we try to look at specific shape changes. So is my outline, first biological inspiration, some architectures, and then those diffusion-driven systems. So, I mean, Peter already mentioned it a little bit, John and Vanessa in her talk, so I will be quick. So not everybody knows, but actually plants do move, and if you're very patient, you might see even growth movement or from day to day, like here in this case of tendril perversions. Well, it's typically the time scales of a matter of hours. Then if we are a little bit more impatient, then the pine cones only takes about 10 to 15 minutes to, if you take a dry one, and to close inside a glass of water. And there are some really, really fast ones that we even need high-speed camera to really see what's the movement like the Venus flytrap that will snap as a mosquito of the right size is entering it. And we can divide them so in two categories, maybe growth movement and the actuation movement. And growth movement are maybe a little bit more tricky because you have biology involved, whereas in especially the passive actuators, those are the best potential to being copied. Another quick idea is this idea of hierarchy that you already heard in the biological talk. So actually, all of us are familiar with the idea. All you need is a lot of Lego, some motivated kids or even parents, and this is what you can do with it. So build some structures. Or, I mean, you only need to look at macro-scale architecture, skyscrapers, building, to see that you often have a primary structure, a secondary structure, etc. So the only thing that nature does better than us, it's that the Lego blocks themselves are actually structures, and so it goes deeper until the fibers, then the cell walls with the microfibril angle, and even the configuration of the cellulose. Okay, so then the pine cone is a typical example of a structure that is dead, but that still is able to react to the environment. So really quickly, we see that this was already mentioned by Peter, that the microfibril angle is actually the design variable that will tune the behavior of every one of these individual scales. So if you look at the top of the scale, you see that the fibers are more or less longitudinal, so you have no expansion in this direction. And if you look at the bottom, then you have approximately perpendicular fibers, so you have maximal extension, and this is a typical bilayer bending effect. So this idea of biological inspiration is just that we are able to, or we could be able to control the change of shapes just by playing with the internal strains. So how and where does the structure changes its internal volumes? So internal strains, this is what I mean by this real-world eigenstrains. So eigenstrains is just something to tell you that it could be actually triggered by different, several different sources. So in the pinecone example, it was a simple swelling. The bilayers, often thermostat examples, use thermal expansion. And we saw also in the smart material, in the talk about smart material, that phase transformation can be also used to trigger shape changes. So actually any physical phenomenon that leads to volume change. So let's go to some eigenstrain architectures briefly. So here again, this bilayer idea. So it's really old. I think it was invented by a Swiss clockmaker even before that. But the first scientific paper about it is from Timoshenko almost 100 years ago. And what we have is if you have a differential expansion in the cross section between here the black that wants to swell and the white one that is just passively resisting, then you will have a creation of curvature. And we have several examples, I mean actually really a lot, but here I just show you a few. some are natural, some artificial. So you already saw them briefly. We have the pine cone, that is one example. We have the wheat on, where it's a little bit different, because actually here the bilayer effect is localized here near the seed. So all this antenna is actually not bending. The bending is localized here, but it's just amplifying the bending. We have this rather complicated looking example of ice plant seed capsule that Vanessa presented, but that in the end, when you reduce the system, simplify the system, turns out to be a simple bilayer activated by those keels against a more complicated, geometrically complicated, but from the mechanics, it's the same. And artificial, so with the colleague of mine at summer school, we wanted to design a maquette that reacts to humidity changes. So just by buying thin wood strips and gluing them with plastic shapes, we have this like model of an umbrella that could unfold when it rains. And I mean, it worked at this scale. Of course, the big question of the system is, how can we scale them up? And another example, that it's a German architect, Achim Menges, that created the system that actually surprisingly looks very similar to those ice plants, even though it's not related. So it's a hygroscope system where you have also wood active layers attached to plastic passive layers that open and close with changes on humidity, and it's parts of the permanent exposition at Centre Pompidou in Paris, and this scale of approximately 1 meter. So this is one idea, just bilayer systems. And then once we have bilayers, actually what we can do, if I find the mouse, is we can stack them on top of each other. So here the colors change, it's pink for active and green for passive. And so just by changing the mirror plane of this bilayer along the structure, we're able to do local bending, but with rotation. So it's actually some kind of twisting motion like this. But this is actually maybe not so surprising, that if you have a one-dimensional long structure, like type of bar structure, but if you play with the three-dimensional strains inside of it, that you can match a different shape. So actually I wrote an algorithm that enables to look at, to explore the space of shape changes. So for example, using a simple square cross-section, then cutting it in a couple of domains, assigning some materials with different assignment algorithms to it, meshing it, and just using finite element, looking at the deformation. So here in red we have the active parts that, in case of a helicoidal arrangement, as I showed before, do this helix. And if you do something random, well, you get random in the end. So this is maybe not so surprising, but it shows you that you have freedom of doing different shape changes. But when we had that, we wanted to look also at this in a more systematic way. So instead of having the freedom of changing along the structure, we said, let's look at extrudable cross-sections. So just taking square cross-sections that with a certain distribution of active and passive layers inside of it, and seeing what kind of movement can we have. So here in this chart, I show that for a square cross section, here we see the symmetry. So there are four mirror planes and one rotation axis. And in this line here, I will then put a material distribution inside of it. So a contrast of active and passive. And in the different lines, I see that I can here keep the symmetry by just putting a square inside the square. So, I mean, there is not so much that could happen here. Or break it down, for example, by just keeping here the rotational axis, or just keeping a mirror plane, or two mirror plane here, and so on and so on. So this idea was based on Curie's principle that effects have at least the symmetry of their causes. So because at the time we didn't really know what would lead to what kind of motion, we just tried to restrict the symmetry space. So another way to present it is putting the the fully symmetric in the middle, and then just keeping the mirror plane around it. And if you take one of this cross section and rotate it 4 times around this axis, then you generate those families of cross sections. And the results for the finite element, actually, we saw that having a structure with a rotational axis is not enough to actually observe rotation. In this case, even for very high contrast between the black expanding and the white resisting zones, nothing was happening, just stretching. But if instead of having a closed cross section, I allow for having some kind of wings, then we see that it's able to create a twist. And this twist can be tuned just by playing with the geometry of the wings, like from a rather small inertia would lead to a high twist, and a high inertia would lead to a small twist. Interestingly, this one in the end also doesn't work. So then we wanted to see, I mean, now we would like to see if this is only on computer, if this works also in reality. So luckily, we have the chance to collaborate with James Weaver from Harvard, that is able to print multi-materials. So in this case, he's able to print materials from 1 megapascal to 1 gigapascal. And so we decided to print this twisters. Actually, in this example, the soft part is in the middle and the hard part are on the side, because first we wanted to use pressure to activate it. But reading the safety data sheet of this material, which is polyurethane, they said, don't put it in acetone, it works well. We said, perfect, we put it in acetone. And what we observe here is some helical deformation. So it's not this twisting that we had before, because it's the opposite distribution of soft and hard, but it's showing that it works. And we are currently working on measuring the properties of this a little bit in more detail. So I gave you some examples, I mean, showed you the biological inspiration, gave you some examples of eigenstrain architectures. And now I come to the main part of my talk, namely those diffusion-driven systems. So first, before actually going into that, I just want to give you, to show you this example. So what will happen for a bilayer if instead of having a very long dimension and being thin, it's actually something that is has 2 dimensions, so where the length and the width are comparable. So it's still a rectangle, let's say, but the width is not too small. Which one of those 2 shapes will it bend? Will it bend in the log direction, or will it bend along the short direction? Actually, it turns out it's not so easy to answer. I mean, trying to look at it just from an energetical perspective, we all know that it's much easier to bend a piece of paper than to turn a piece of paper into a football, because it's actually, this is a little bit what this expression is telling you, that when the thickness of the layer is thin, then because the stretching energy goes with the is linear with the thickness, and the bending energy is to the power of third with the thickness, then it's actually much easier to bend it than to stretch it. But if we look at those 2 configurations from this, let's look at the stretching content. So if we take a spiral like this and just show this from the top, we have stretching in all this direction. So this one. And in this case, we have stretching along this direction. So this is what I show here. But it turns out that it's exactly the same area, so they have the same stretching content. Now if we look at the second contribution, bending, we have bending along the long direction, and so it's also the same. So it's not really explaining it. And actually, this was solved pretty recently, not by me, but by Alben in the literature, that shows that in this energy map, so in red you have the Timoshenko solution, where it's just bended in one direction and straight in the other one, that actually you have a release along the borders, so it's the boundary layer effect. And because the spiral shape has a longer border than the cigar shape, then it releases more energy, and so that's why it's favored. So it's not so trivial as one might think at first. And yeah, on this picture you see here that the border is actually a little bit double curved to release the stretching energy. So now let me come to the system we're studying. So It's so Leonid Dionov from Dresden actually came to us with those systems. So it's made by photolithography, and it's a thermoresponsive bilayer. So you have one passive layer on top, PMMA, that doesn't react to water, doesn't swell with water, even with changes of temperature. And on bottom, you have another polymer, NIPAM, that actually swells about 10%. When we switch above a critical temperature, this temperature can also be tuned by playing with the chemical composition of the solvent. So, for example, here they tuned it so that it's close to for biomedical applications maybe. And so what happens is when we switch the temperature, then the green layer starts to expand. And we have a bending that occurs. And here I've written diffusion because actually we will see that the substrate plays a very important role in the system, because really the swelling starts from the edges and then slowly diffuses inside. So we looked at two kinds of shapes, rectangles and stars. I didn't say before. No, okay. So the typical dimensions, it's like 1 to 2 micrometers thick, and here 500 micrometers wide. So let me talk first about rectangles. So here's the experimental results where we try to look systematically at shapes from 1,000 micrometer to 125 micrometer squares and going to rectangle by increasing the aspect ratio from 1 to 2 to 4 then to 8. And so I don't want you to look at all these pictures in details now, but in this what we observed actually is that there is a trend if you along the diagonal. So if you have something that is square shaped, I mean, if your radius of curvature, which is approximately 10 micrometer, is approximately the same size as your is not too small compared to your length, then you will have some imperfection, some diagonal breaking. If it's very much shorter than your dimensions, then you will have we observe all side bending. But what's interesting now is that if we take a very elongated shape, we see that we have this long side rolling that wins. And so if you remember what I explained just previously, it's exactly the opposite as for a free bilayer. So that's kind of interesting. So it means the only thing we didn't consider yet is this diffusion aspect of it. So now we have diffusion and actuation. So, being an engineer, it's like, oh no, it's a couple problem, it's complicated. But good news is that when we look at the typical timescales of diffusion and actuation, we see that diffusion is matter of seconds when for this particular material, but often I think, whereas actuation is proportional to the speed of mechanical waves, so it's much much faster. So good news is we can decouple those two and just look at quasi-statically at the actuation pattern. So here I'm going to try to give just an argument to explain you why the long side rolling is actually winning. So if we take a rectangle like this and taking again this kind of energetical expression for it, we just activate the border a little bit. So we stop at the early time point and we say, okay, after switching the temperature, the water diffused a distance d. And here AD is simply the area of this crown around it. And so if it's flat now, it's a double stretch area, so it's very costly in energy. And now if we say that we allow it to roll along the long side like this, then we can subtract in yellow from AD those two contributions. And then we only have those small red areas as double stretching. And if we allow the other way, if we allow only the short side rolling to start, then we get this contribution. And because L is bigger than W, We see that the long side rolling scenario in the beginning seems to be more optimal energetically speaking than the short side rolling, even though in the end it's the other one. So by finite element calculation, actually I found this behavior again, but only for an aspect ratio of approximately 4. So meaning if I take something shorter than this, then it's still the short side is somehow winning, but actually to be really accurate, the substrate is the thing is curling down on the side, which is not really physical, so maybe that's why the solution is not real. But for a long aspect ratio, if we only activate the crown, I found that the long side rolling is effectively winning. So the conclusion of this, rectangles means that history matters. So if you take a bilayer expanding in two directions, if you activate the bottom layer instantaneously, then you get the spiral, just like Timoshenko, Pinecone, I mean, all these examples. But if you activate it progressively from the side, actually you get the other solution. So this is kind of interesting. Now, if we go to stars, more interesting shapes, just let you watch the video, we see that the actuation process is way more complicated than for rectangles. And so we see different patterns, and what's even more, we see that there are different steps in the actuation. So just to check again this argument of separation of timescales, here actually on this video we see a slight contrast here in between light blue and dark blue, and this is the diffusion front that we see progressing, and so it's like speed of seconds, and here's activation, for example, when it reaches a certain point, which is speed of milliseconds, so it's confirmed the decoupling. So as I said, we have different steps in the actuation process. So we start from more rounded edged stars that pretty quickly formed this pointy sharp edges stars, and after a certain time they will fold really quickly into a variety of different shapes. For the experimentalists observe this one has the highest probability of appearance, actually. So how can we understand this? So it's if we look at one of the wings separately, we can differentiate those two steps. So one first step, as I said, where the curved corner form tubes, straight tubes, and then a second step, after a given time, where those wings will fold. So the tube formation. So here on the left, you see three abacus modelization, a finite element simulation of a crown that is constrained on the inside, and where the red part, so the bottom part, is expanding isotropically, and the top part is just a passive elastically resisting to it. And D is the dimension of the size of the crown. And we see that as we increase the size of the crown, the number of wrinkles, so N here, is actually decreasing. So that's also what is showed in this graph, that that the number of wrinkles is inversely proportional to the activation depth. So interestingly, this argument actually was they came to us with this system, and I said, oh, you should see wrinkling, and then they said, oh yeah, actually we do. So it was funny that, because it showed that the theory was working. And another question we had in the experiment is that at some point it stops. So for example, if you start with a circle and you switch temperature, it will start to wrinkle from the sides, but it won't just like simulation wrinkle and wrinkle until it's like maybe flapping in two. It will stop for here a given angle, a critical angle of 130 degrees, for example. And this we don't quite understand completely now, but I think it's when the bilayer touches the flat part again that it stops. So this wrinkling here is a torn plastic bag where you see this fractal wave. I mean, if you have if you take a plastic bag and you tear it, then on the size along the fracture, you will have plastification strains that will lead to excessive edge length. And here you see this fractal wave that you can also see in vegetables, in lettuce, vegetables, or clothes or something. And it's confirmed by the experiments. We see here at different time points that the number of wrinkles here is very small. We don't really see. Here we start to see them. Here we can actually start to count them, and at some point they stop. Okay, so this is actually our understanding of the first step. So we understand the wrinkling. There's the stopping condition is not completely solved yet. The second step is, imagine now you have one of the wings that was first curved and that now has tubes around its sides. So actually it's much more difficult to bend it along a line like this, horizontal line like this. But if you look at those points connecting to the next wing, they act like as weak points. And the assumption we have is that the folding appears always along the lines connecting straight line connecting two of those weak points. And so also by finite element, it actually makes sense that the bending here is much, much higher than the bending along another line. And so we see this way that we can, from a 2D structure, form 3D pyramids. The conclusion of this part is a bit similar to the one with the rectangles, that history matters. So you can have past dependency. If you take a bilayer like this and you activate it homogeneously, you will get a continuous bending. But if you activate it in steps, so first you create some tubes on the side and then you let it diffuse to the center, you will get a completely different end result. As I showed before in simulation, we can also tune, so it's a little bit arty, you know, experimentally, but tune the dimensions so to form a perfect 3D pyramid from 2D simple bilayers just by using this progressive diffusion from the sides. And sometimes, so if we play with other dimensions, we can have conflict because, for example, here we start with a curved shape, we have this straight edge forming, we can count here the different weak points here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, so on. And maybe because of imperfections, the material, little changes in diffusion, one of the wings will start to fold and the folding will then erase those two weak points. So basically once this wing has folded, then those two cannot fold anymore. So the next possible one is this one. And that's what we see here. And then the next possible one would be this one. And so this explains also why this is the most observed pattern. So come to the conclusion. So analyzing, you know, plant motion gives us this idea that we can play with swelling, differential swelling properties inside structures to change their shape. But what I showed also in those examples that you can introduce this heterogeneity, this mismatch in swelling, not only by the architecture of properties, but also by the history of the activation of your structure. And this way, even with very simple bilayers, you can achieve rather complex movements, as I showed with the pyramids and stuff. So with this, I'd like to thank the biomaterial department, the people I'm collaborating with, and especially Peter Fratzel and John Dunlop, Yves Bréchet for taking me as a PhD student, James Weaver for our interactions and printing, and of course for what I presented right now, the team from Dresden under Leonid Dionov and Georgi, who did all the experiments and so on. And last but not least, if we don't find an immediate application of those kind of systems, at least it's pretty. Yeah.